go back to the structure of the first chapter, I mean the detailed contents, table of contents of the first chapter in the handout. So this chapter deals with what is translated as virtue, or in Pali it is sila. So the first thing mentioned there is a stanza from the Sanyutta Nikaya as an introductory talk. And then the author explained what the path of purification is, and along with the commentary on the stanza quoted at the beginning of the book. And then the author goes on to explain sila or virtue. And what is sila? What is virtue? And then he explained that volition is virtue, mental factors are virtue, restraint is virtue, and non-transgression is virtue. And this he explained according to a text called Patisambhida Magga. And in connection with restraint, the author explained 5 kinds of restraint, and they are given in paragraph 18. Then, after explaining what virtue is, what is taken to be virtue according to the teachings of Theravada, the author goes on to explain the meaning of the word sila in Pali. Why it is called sila, why virtue is called sila in Pali, and the explanation given is it is called sila because it coordinates the bodily and verbal actions, and also it serves as a foundation for the acquisition of wholesome states. So the two basic meanings of the word are given there. The one is coordinating, and the other is the basis for holding up. And then the other gives the characteristic, function, manifestation, and the proximate cause of sila or virtue. It is customary with Theravada authors that whenever there is something to be studied or to be understood, they explain that thing to be understood with reference to its characteristic, its function, its manifestation, and its proximate cause. So in Abhidhamma also, everything, I mean the Chaita and 52 Chaitasikas, each of them, are explained with reference to characteristic and so on. So the characteristics and others of sila or virtue are given in paragraphs 20 to 22. And next, the author gives the benefits of virtue, benefits of having pure virtue or pure sila. And then he describes the different kinds of virtue which takes up the rest of the first chapter. And we reached to the end of characteristic and so on last week. So this week we will begin with the benefits of virtue, paragraphs 23, 24, and so on. And this paragraph gives us quotations from the suttas. First from Anguttara Nikaya. Do you see the words A, 5, and 1? So A means Anguttara Nikaya. It's a name of a one of the five collections. So the translation of it is called Gradual Sayings. And there are five volumes of them. And the copies are in the library here. And then further down, towards the bottom, you see D286. And D means Diga Nikaya. This is another collection. And the translation of this Nikaya is called Dialogues of the Buddha. There are three volumes. And then a little down, you see M133. M means Majjhima Nikaya, another division of suttas. And the translation of this Nikaya is called Middle Length Sayings. I hope you have read all these. These are the benefits of virtue. And then on the next page, beginning with furthermore, the author gives the same benefits of virtue in verse form. And towards the bottom, about six lines from the bottom of the verses, there is a saying, with dread of self-blame and the like. So virtue entirely does away with dread of self-blame and the like. Now, self-blame and the like, what are the others? The benefits of being virtuous, or benefits of having pure or good sila, as these are four. And the dangers of being unvirtuous, or dangers of having bad sila, are also four. So these four are, first, self-blame or self-reproach. That is the first. So when our moral conduct is impure, the first blame comes from ourselves, because we only know what we did. So the first, there is self-reproach or self-blame, and then the blame of others, or reproach of others. So if we do not keep our rules properly, if we break our precepts, then other people will also blame us. So there is the danger of blame of others, or others' reproach. And the third disadvantage is punishment. If we do not keep precepts, then we may commit crimes. We may kill beings, or we may kill human beings. We may steal, and so on. And as a result of this, we will get punishment in this life. So punishment is another danger of being impure moral conduct. And the last one is the unhappy destiny. That means rebirth in the four woeful states, or four states of loss. Rebirth in hell, rebirth in animal kingdom, rebirth as hungry ghosts, and rebirth as another kind of ghosts. So these are the four disadvantages of being impure in moral conduct, and the opposite of them are the four benefits. So virtue entirely does away with dread of self-blame means virtue entirely does away with the danger of these four, namely self-reproach, others' reproach, punishment, and unhappy destiny. And then the author gives kinds of virtue. Western people often say that Eastern people are fond of numbers. They want to give 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. So here, virtue is explained as of one kind, of two kinds, three kinds, four kinds, five kinds. And this, first the author gives just a list of them, and then they are explained in detail. So one kind is just, there is only one sila, or one virtue, according to the characteristic. So When we take into account the characteristic, there is only one virtue which has the characteristic of coordinating bodily and mental, bodily and verbal actions and say holding up people. Then there are two kinds, three kinds and so on. You can read the list. And on page 11, the paragraph 16, I want to make some changes there. Now the author is explaining four kinds of virtue. There's natural virtue, customary virtue, and necessary virtue. I think we should say ingrained virtue instead of necessary virtue. The Pali word here is dhammata. That means the way it is. That means just ingrained virtue. And the last one is virtue due to previous causes. Here, previous causes means causes in previous lives. Some people are virtuous because they were virtuous in their past lives too. So this being virtuous is carried over from past lives. There are four kinds of them. And in the detailed explanation, towards the bottom of paragraph 26, herein keeping is accomplished by faith and energy, avoiding by faith and mindfulness. Now, this paragraph explains two kinds of virtue. One is keeping and one is avoiding. Keeping means following the advice that this should be done. And avoiding means following the advice that this should not be done. So most precepts are this should not be done. So you must not kill, you must not steal, and so on. Sometimes you should do this or you should do this, that. And if we do not do them, we come to some kind of unvirtuousness. So there are two kinds. And the keeping is accomplished by faith and energy. Because there are some, we call them rules, saying that monks must do this or that at the monastery or something like that. And this kind of sila or virtue is accomplished by faith. If you have faith or confidence in the Buddha, if you have energy or effort, then you can keep that sila. But avoiding is by faith. Now here, in this translation, it is said by faith and mindfulness. But in the Burmese edition, Burmese Pali edition, and also in the Polytech Society's edition, there is no word for mindfulness. And so we should strike out two words here, and mindfulness. We should just say avoiding is accomplished by faith. Only when you have faith, you have confidence in the rules and in the Buddha, can you keep yourself from breaking rules. So it is through faith and not by mindfulness. And the text, mindfulness is not supported by the commentary on this book. We call it sub-commentary. So in the sub-commentary also, only the word faith or the Pali word sadda is explained and not mindfulness or sati. So we should say here, avoiding is accomplished by faith. So if you have faith, if you have confidence in the Buddha and in his teaching, then you can follow the rules that prohibit you to do something. Because you have to do something when you follow the rule, this should be done. Suppose there are duties to be done to our teachers. Say we must get up early in the morning before the teacher gets up, and we must offer him water for washing his face, and if there is something to eat, we must offer him, and we must do some other chores for him, and so on. So these are called the first kind, keeping. So if we do not have faith, and if we do not have make effort, then we will not accomplish that kind of sila. So there, faith and energy, both are required. But refraining from something needs only faith, not necessarily mindfulness. And in the next paragraph, that of good behavior and that of beginning of the life of purity, they are the terms in Pali, translated direct here. And about four lines down, this is a term for the virtue that has livelihood as eight. And on the second line of this page, there is this is a term for virtue other than that which has livelihood has eight. And the eight are given in the footnote. Refraining from three wrong bodily actions, refraining from four verbal wrong actions, and refraining from wrong livelihood. So they constitute eight precepts. These eight precepts are different from the eight precepts to be mentioned a little later. And these eight precepts are called those that have livelihood as eight. The others are different. So this is a term for virtue that has livelihood as eight. It is the initial stage of the path, because it has actually to be purified in the prior stage too. I think there is no word for two in the original Pali, so we should leave out two. This sila has to be accomplished before we practice, before we take up the beginning of the life of purity. That means before we practice meditation, we have to purify our moral conduct. So it has to be accomplished or purified in the prior stage of the path. The path here means the practice of meditation leading to the enlightenment. And in paragraph 29, four kinds of silas are mentioned, and there are two kinds of dependence: dependence through craving and dependence through false use. Actually, craving itself is dependence here, and false use themselves are dependence here. Because sometimes we have attachment, we have loba. So we want to be reborn in a better world. We want to be reborn as a deva, a celestial being. We want to be reborn as human beings in a good family, something like that. So we practice sila so that we may be reborn in a better existence. And that sila is dependent on craving or attachment. Because we have attachment to these lives, we do something so that we may be reborn there. So craving itself is dependence, not dependence through craving, but dependence as craving, we may say. And sometimes we have false view that purification is through virtuous conduct. That means we can become purified through virtue only. And that is a false view, because we have to practice virtue first, and then concentration and wisdom. So virtue alone by itself will not help us to become enlightened, to become purified. Purification here means purification of mind in the form of enlightenment. So enlightenment can be gained only through the practice of vipassana meditation only through practice of wisdom. And that practice of wisdom is possible only when there is concentration. And concentration can be built only on the purification of moral conduct. But purification of moral conduct alone by itself cannot lead us to emancipation or enlightenment. So that is a false view. And through this false view, we practice sila. And so false view is dependence for the practice of sila. So there are two kinds. Let us go back a little up this page. Do you understand the double quote about the middle of the first paragraph? Of what is included in the double quote? The bhikkhus and bhikkhunis patimokkha. Page 12. Now, the rules for bhikkhu means monks, right? And bhikkhunis are nuns. So rules for monks and nuns are technically called patimokkha. So the word patimokkha is given in the translation. Since there are two, they are called double code. And there are 227 rules in the rules for monks and 311 rules in the rules for nuns or bhikkhunis. So women have more rules than monks have. And then those belong to the beginning of the life of purity. And that included in the duties set out in the khandakas of the Vinaya. Now, Vinaya Pitaka. You know there are three Pitakas. And the first is Vinaya Pitaka. Vinaya Pitaka consists of rules for monks and nuns and so on. Now, Vinaya Pitaka is composed as the 227 rules and 311 rules for monks and nuns, and then stories leading to the laying down of these rules, and then some explanations of the words and the rules, and they are called Sutta Vibhanga. And then there are some other books which are called Khandaka. Khandaka means just sections. And in the Khandakas, mostly rules pertaining to the keeping are given. So there are Khandakas like how to perform the ordination ceremony and what qualifications must one have in order to be ordained and so on. And in another section, the duties which are to be performed to our teachers or to our pupils and to the guest monks and so on are mentioned. So these are called khandakas. So that included in the duties set out in the khandakas is that of good behavior. There are two books containing these khandakas. One is called Great Khandaka, and the other is called Small or Lesser Khandaka. And those are very interesting books if you are interested in something like a social conditions during the time of the Buddha. What things, what utensils or what things they use, how they made houses and all these things. Because as the number of monks grow, there are more and more problems. And those monks are like children. Sometimes they just went to the Buddha and asked him what to do. Now, monks have to prepare dye for themselves. So they have to boil some bark of the tree or some pieces of wood from which we can get color. And then it overflow. And then they went to the Buddha and reported it to him. The dye overflow and what to do? And Buddha said, use something, use a filter or something.
Turn down the fire.
So it's in, these books are interesting. So the duties and other things contained in those are called here the virtue that is of good behavior, and those that are set out in the Khandakas. And page 13, paragraph 32. In the seventh diet, all virtue subject to kankas is mundane. I hope you understand what subject to is. What is subject to kankas? Kankas means mental defilements. So subject to mental defilements. And subject to mental defilements really means the object of mental defilements. So the virtue which is object of mental defilements is called mundane, and that which is not is called supramundane. And next paragraph, in the first of the triads, the inferior, and the medium and superior. The inferior is produced by inferior zeal, purity of consciousness, energy, or inquiry. Now here, you have to understand these four. The Pali word for zeal is chanda. You have met the word chanda among the 52 mental factors. And it is translated there as conation. So zeal, chanda means a will to do. The mere will to do is called chanda. It is not desire. It is not attachment. So it is just a will to do. You want to do something. So you want to pick up a book. And that will to pick up a book is called chanda. So when that zeal or chanda or coronation is strong, it is called inferior. And there are four kinds of, in Pali they are called adhipati, dominating factors. And please read Manual of Abhidhamma, chapter 7, for these four kinds of adhipatis. Chapter 7, page 334 and 338. These are the four that are called dominating factors, because they arise with other mental concomitants, but one of them predominates. Sometimes zeal predominates, sometimes consciousness predominates, and so on. So they are called dominating factors. So zeal, the Pali word for zeal is chanda. And purity of consciousness, not necessarily purity of, but just consciousness there. Energy or inquiry. Inquiry really means knowledge or understanding. Not really inquiring into something. The Pali word for inquiry is vimansa, V-I-M-A-M-S-A. And vimansa is translated as inquiry. The basic meaning of vimansa is inquiry. That is correct. But it is a synonym for Paliwat Panya, understanding. So here, sometimes understanding or knowledge or wisdom predominates. So when these four, actually one of these four are inferior, then the sila is called inferior sila. When they are of medium, then they are called medium, and when they are superior, they are called superior, and so on. So, please read Manual of Abhidhamma, chapter 7, page 334 and 338, for these four kinds of dominating factors. That motivated by craving, the purpose of which is to enjoy continued existence, is inferior. Actually, what it means here is to enjoy better existence and to enjoy wealth or something in that existence. Not continued existence, but to enjoy a better existence and to enjoy some things there. And in paragraph 35, for third line, that practiced by the magnanimous ordinary man. What is that? Magnanimous ordinary man. The Pali word is puttujana. Puttujana means a person who has not reached any of the stages of enlightenment. So we call him ordinary person. Or the usual translation for that word is worldling. So ordinary worldling.
How did it become magnanimous?
Magnanimous actually means, say, he has good moral habit, and also he is what do you call? He is well read.
He's taking a class.
to translate directly, he has heard well, because during the time of the Buddha and sometime after that, there were no books. So whatever you learn, you learn from hearing someone. Now, I hope you have read these pages, right? So I will be picking the places where I want to give you some more information or some explanation. So we go to page 15, paragraph 40. Now, in the second treatise, there are training precepts announced for bhikkhus to keep, irrespective of what is announced for bhikkhunis. What do you understand by that? Irrespective of what is announced for bhikkhunis.
You shouldn't bother about what other people's precepts are, but follow your own.
No. That is not what is meant. You know, I told you there are 227 rules for monks and 311 for nuns. Now, there are rules which are common to both monks and nuns, and there are others which are not common. Now, monks must keep 227 rules, and also some of the rules laid down for nuns. That is what is meant here. So monks' precepts really means not only 227 rules, but some other rules which are originally meant for nuns, but which they also have to keep. For example, there is no rule in 227 rules that monks must not sing or not dance or not go to shows and so on.
No
rules in 227 rules for monks, but there is that rule for bhikkhunis. So monks must also keep that rule, although it is not included in the 227 rules.
I know, I took that one.
So, when we say rules for monks rules, we mean 227 plus some other rules, which they must keep, although they are not in the rules for monks. The same with rules for nuns. There are some rules which are common to both monks and nuns, and so they must keep those rules too. So that is what is meant here.
Is it translated poorly? Because it's not really...
Right, yeah, the translation is, I think, out of... It is a little... What do you call?
Okay, so that's what it means.
Yeah, so the meaning here is that...
Irrespective is not correct.
No, it is not correct, right.
In fact, it should be the other way around. And that's what the Kunis...
But you understand, right?
I understand. What
yes,
you said.
Very good. That's what I want you to.
What about in addition to some of the things that are announced for the baking? That might.
Yeah, that helps. Not in addition to. No. Because in addition to means some rules for bhikkhunis in addition to their own rules. Right? For monks. So, maybe including some rules for bhikkhunis that are announced for bhikkhunis. So the same with the rules for bhikkhunis. And then, for lay people here, the 10 precepts of virtue for male and female novices, they are not for... lay people, for novices, are the virtue of the not fully admitted. Now, the 5 training precepts, 10 when possible, as a permanent undertaking, here also, the translation is a little incorrect. Now, the 5 training precepts are permanent training. They are called in Pali, nitya sila. Nitya means, you know the word anitya. Impermanent. So nature is permanent. So it is. They are called permanent sila. That means, if you claim yourself to be a follower of the Buddha, then you must keep these 5 precepts. So they must be with you always. So they are the permanent undertaking. But 10 are to be undertaken when you can. So the 5 training precepts. As a permanent undertaking, 10 when possible, and 8 as the factors of uposatha. And not day, just uposatha. Now, the word uposatha in Pali can mean 2 things. The observance and the day of observance. But here, the day is not meant. The 8 as the factors of uposatha means the 8 precepts. 5 precepts, the 5 permanent precepts plus not eating after midday, not using flowers, perfumes, and so on, and also not singing, dancing, and not using luxurious beds and seats. So these 8 precepts are called uposatha precepts. And at my retreat, I have the yogis take 8 precepts. So the most important thing is not eating after midday. So these 8 precepts are called uposatha. So if it is uposatha for lay people, we mean these 8 precepts. But uposatha for monks is different. Uposatha for monks is just recitation of the 227 rules in an assembly. So lay people should take 5 precepts always, keep 5 precepts always. And if they can, they can take 8 precepts on certain days of the month. The usual days are full moon day, new moon day and the eighth of each half month. We go by lunar month, and the month is divided into two halves, the bright half and the dark half. So the middle of the bright half is the eighth day, and also the middle of the dark half is also the eighth day. So at least 4 days in a month. And that is how people in Buddhist countries now, like in Burma, Sri Lanka and Thailand, and observe Uposatha. They go to monasteries and keep 8 precepts and stay the whole day at the monastery, hearing the talks, offering some food or something to the monks, and practicing meditation. And in Thailand and in Laos and Cambodia, they even spend the night at the monastery. And they go back home only next morning.
Here we do a full moon ceremony, and that's the earliest basis of this is why we do a full moon ceremony, in which we do repentance and taking precepts. It's all related to that.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a ceremony every month on the full moon.
I see. So that is called Uposatha. So for male and female lay followers are the virtue of lady. But for monks, Uposatha means, as I said, assembling at one place, and then one of the monks recites the rules of Patimokkha, and the other monks pay respectful attention to his recitation. You know, there were no books in the olden days, and so to make them not forget their rules, to remember their rules is done in this way. So monks learn the rules by heart, and one of the monks recites the rules and others pay attention to his recitation. It is still done in Burma and Thailand and also in Ceylon. So this is called Uposatha of monks. Now, the fourth tetrad from paragraph 42. From paragraph 42, the author explains the four kinds of sila, or the four kinds of virtue, often mentioned in the suttas. And these four are, for monks, the important kinds of virtue. And these will be explained in more detail than the others. And first, the author gives the text from the suttas. Say, a bhikkhu dwells restrained with the Patimokkha restraint, possessed of the proper conduct and resort, and seeing fear in the slightest fault, he trains himself by undertaking the precepts of training. It's virtue of Patimokkha restraint. So this is one kind of sila. Virtue of Patimokkha restraint simply means keeping the Patimokkha rules, keeping the 227 or 311 rules, keeping them unbroken. And this will be explained later. And the next B paragraph shows the restraint of the sense faculties. That means restraint of the eyes, ears, and so on. This is actually not, strictly speaking, it is not sila, because it is not keeping any rules. But when you have restraint of sense faculties, your sila, your virtue is practically pure. So it is included in the sila. And it is, on seeing a visible object with the eye, he apprehends neither the signs nor the particulars through which, if he left the eye faculty unguarded, evil and unprofitable states of covetousness and grief might invade him. He enters upon the way of its restraint. He guards the eye faculty, undertakes the restraint of the eye faculty, and so on. In brief, what it means is, when you see something, you try not to get akusala from it. That is what is meant by the restraint of the senses. So you see a beautiful thing, and if you have no wise attention, then you will get attached to the thing, and there will be akusala. So you try to keep yourself from getting akusala, getting unwholesome thoughts, by the practice of mindfulness. So the practice of mindfulness is just to prevent attachment to these objects. So it does not mean that we are to close our eyes or to close our ears and not look at them or not listen to something at all. It does not mean that. We will be seeing things and we will be hearing.